to focus, just to persevere and just to make it. But everything that's within your grasp, you gotta take it, you gotta go harder. Just dig deeper inside you to find that method, that mode that wants that hunger to survive. Just to ride the grind and take it the way you gotta take it and never stop.
I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. Can't no one stop me, yeah, bring it in. I came to win, yeah, I came to win.
What's going on, everybody? This is Kyle Hunter. I'd like to welcome you back to the Diagnosis Success Podcast, where we talk about motivation, inspiration, dedication. And as always, this is High Level Conversation. And today is a super, super dope day because we got part two of our interview with the legend, just a dope, timeless MC, man. And y'all know what it is, man. We ain't got to get a whole introduction, man. Mike Geronimo, what's up, King?
Peace, King. What's the word, bro?
Everything's healthy, man. Everything's good, man. We just humbled to have you back a second time, King.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm flattered. So it's crazy, but I'm here, bro. I'm here.
Definitely. Definitely, man. So, you know, the first part of the interview, we really kind of talked about historically, like all the things that you had going on, the culmination of just all the work that you did and everything like that. So, you know, for the second part of this interview, man, because you got such a huge base, what we did, a lot of the listeners that we have on this podcast, which is a lot of people, we just hit them up and say, hey, you know, any questions that you have for Mike, feel free to just let us know. So, man, literally, we had like over 100 questions, man.
Like, wow.
So we had to cut that down, man.
That's a shame. Wow,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact, man. Yeah, so we had to filter it down, man. So, you know, we got a couple of them here, man. So the first one, it's actually, you know, your new project that's entitled 3016. So a question that came through was, how did you come up with the name for that album title? And like, is it any type of real like significance behind it?
Yeah, actually 3016 is my dad's badge number. And my dad passed away about like 6 years ago. But he was one of the biggest reasons why I even started doing this project. Like I had promised him that when I felt, you know, comfortable with doing music again and when I felt compelled to, you know, really get back into it and really, really do it, I promised him, you know, I would do that. And so he was pretty much the primary catalyst for me going in and recording. So to honor him, I chose the name of the album 3016 because that was his badge number. He was a New York City police officer, as well as a member of the United States Armed Forces of the Army. So that was just my way of honoring my dad.
That's super dope, man. That's super dope. And, you know, that's interesting because I guess, like, you got to see both sides of it. Because I know, like, as far as, like, with police brutality and all these things going on, you know, historically, like, minorities, when it comes to law enforcement, they could be a bit apprehensive, obviously, with a lot of the things that happened. But I'm pretty sure that was interesting for you to see that duality, to see that your father was in law enforcement, but he was a stand-up dude at the same time. So I know you probably got an interesting perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. It gave me a chance to walk, like the saying goes, in somebody else's moccasins for a second. You know, you can't help being an African-American male and not having some sort of a apprehension and a reluctance and a bitterness towards law enforcement in light of all the things that have been done to us for a century. Same breath, my dad was part of something that's a noble calling. My dad earlier on believed that he could be one of those catalysts for change in the community, and that's what he ended up, you know, giving himself towards. And he was always somebody that was big on service and commitment to service. So I got to see, you know, what it is, you know, granted I was young, but I got to see, you know, what it is to have, you know, a family member who goes out and they do something that's so hazardous and so risky, and you know, you're hoping every night that they come home. And then when they do come home, you know, some days they would bring the job home with them, and some days, you know, they'd be okay. And it's a lot for an individual to go through. And I can only imagine, you know, him, what kind of internal conflicts from time to time it must have presented to him as being a Black man and also being in law enforcement. But ultimately, he stuck to his guns. He was a good dude, and he answered his calling, and that's what he dedicated his life to.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And like you said, which is really true, at the end of the day, is like, a lot of times we have to be the change that we seek. And you can't be that change operating from an external perspective. No, you know?
It has to start somewhere, you know.
Right.
And like I said, it's a validity on both sides of the argument, you know, but you have to start somewhere, and you always have to have that optimism that, you know, if we do certain things and we do try to communicate and we do try to make these changes, that they're going to bring about a better situation, you know. So hats off to all African Americans that are in law enforcement and that are in the armed services and that are first responders. Like, I mean, all people in general that choose to do that. That's an amazing thing to dedicate yourself towards. You know,
definitely.
So I think that the best thing we could do is just work towards understanding each other more and kind of like changing the perceptions that we have, mm-hmm. because of all the things that we've seen, you know, unfold before us.
Definitely, man. I agree 110%, man. You know, another question that they had for you, Mike. So the first single from this 3016 is entitled Smoke.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, the people are feeling that single, man. Production, wordplay is crazy. Everything is just super dope about that record, man. Yeah. One of the questions that we got was, what was the creative process like for that single for you?
It was pretty cut and dry for me. You know, like, I just listened to where the beat told me to go with it. And then, you know, granted, like sometimes I'm really critical on what I say. And I really try to always aim for it to be exactly the way that I hear it in my head. So Smoke was just, you know, it was just the basic, yo, you rap. You gotta have your ball game up. What's up? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a very aggressive track, so it just made me get aggressive. And we tweaked the beat a little bit. It was co-produced by my man Who Else in conjunction with Self Service, and they're both amazing producers. So they just went in and they brought more of the track out, and that in turn brought more out of me. And then, you know, you can only hope you get that marriage perfect at the end of the day. And I think if we didn't, we got as close to it as we could. So I'm very pleased with it. But it was a pretty easy process.
Yeah, that record is tough, man. Like, you know, just I got that whole New York vibe, man. South Jamaica, Queens, Boss Smith just going off. You know what I'm saying? So joint solidified, man. No doubt, man. No question, man. Another question that they had for you was, what is your favorite concert that you rocked? Like, what is a show that, you know, is ingrained in your memory that is like one that stands out to you, and why in particular? I know you got a couple, man. I know you got a couple.
Wow. I think one that I kind of always am like, yeah, that was pretty cool. I was in Japan, I think Tokyo or Osaka, and we did this really good show. Like, it was one of those shows where like everything fell into place and the vibe was right and no one missed a beat, and it was just cool how much the energy matched the flow of the show. And I remember, like, at one point, my brother, who was my DJ, and me decided to switch places, but we had like never, ever, ever in a show did that before. So I kind of just looked at him like, yo, let me get behind the tables and you grab the mic. And then he did. And I started cutting a little bit. I think that shocked people because I don't think they knew that I DJed before I was spitting. So I kind of just started cutting and the crowd went crazy. And then I just hit the off button on the turntable and just made it like just die automatic, but it all fell on cue and like the whole venue went bananas. And it was right. Just, and I was like, I looked at my brother and I was like, ah, I wish we would have did that at home, and we both started laughing. But it was cool. It was very memorable.
That's dope, man. Well, we learned something too, man, because I didn't know that, man. Like, how long was you DJing, like, before, you know what I'm saying? Like, when did that take place?
Oh, man, I was DJing when I was, like, I think I want to say I started around, like, late 15 going on 16.
Wow.
Yeah, so I had, like, techniques, and I had, you know, Gem Sound speakers and Gemini mixer and Concord needles and put your penny on the head of the needle and all that. And that was what I did. That's how I really got started with even dealing with hip hop. And yeah, like I just inadvertently segued into writing music and into spitting, and here we are, bro.
Fire, man. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you too, Mike, because you talked about performing overseas. Mm-hmm. What would you say are like the fundamental differences that you notice as opposed to performing overseas, as opposed to being here in the States? Because sometimes, like a lot of musicians that we interview, they say a lot of times it's like sometimes they find that overseas, they're more appreciative of quote unquote real hip hop music as opposed to over here. Sometimes they want it more watered down. Like, what's been your experience with that?
I mean, there's definitely, you know, noticeable differences. I think overseas, yeah, I definitely have come to find that they have more of a sincere appreciation for, you know, that golden era of hip hop and what, you know, came with it and all the stuff that it represents. And they're very in tune with you when you're performing. They may not even know English, but they'll know all the words, all the lyrics to your song, which in itself is amazing. And I think that over here, it's kind of everything is, you know, here and now, and okay, we did this, so what's next? And we did this. And unless you've done something that, you know, has resonated throughout the years and it's also remained respected throughout its cycle, then here you kind of get that, you know, you still get that, like, that head nod, that, all right, that, yeah, you know, like, what's good, OG, you get that shit, you know what I mean? But overseas, it's just, it's just like it's just the respect that they would give because of your of the work that you've done and because they appreciate it so much. And it's not to knock here, but you do find the difference, definitely.
Yeah, definitely, man. We hear that a lot. A lot of people say the reception is just different. You know what I mean? And I feel like, yeah, you know what I mean? And it's like just to appreciate the sound of certain types of hip hop music. Because like you said, a lot of stuff over here can be kind of like trendy, like very like just commercialized. You know what I'm saying? So it's dope when people can actually appreciate not only just one style, but multiple styles. You know what I mean? So
right. I mean, but music goes through that, bro. So me personally, I don't look at it any different as like when jazz, you know, a lot of jazz artists from America, they went overseas for a period in time. And overseas, jazz became, you know, what it was in the United States, but that period allowed for jazz to become something else, and it allowed for growing come back to the States and be a different form of jazz. So I think all music's kind of go through that period where, because where it's made, it's always expected to bring something new. You know, where it's not made, where it's only received, it's kind of like, you know, they have an easier time, as I said, with just respecting it from the aspect of it's something that's been created forever.
Definitely. Definitely, man. That's a fact. That's a fact. Like they say, you know, if you don't know your history, then you don't know where you're going. So to know all those things, you know, in jazz, a lot of people say jazz is like the mother of hip hop, you know? So yeah, that's a fact.
I just look at it like it's no different. Like at one time, jazz had an exodus and it took a breather and it came back. And I think hip hop might be going through somewhat of the same cycle.
Definitely. Definitely, man. I agree 110%, man. Another question that came in for you, Mike, is if you could change anything about the music industry, what would it be and why? like, what you say? How much time you got?
I mean, you know what, bro? Like, I don't know, to be honest with you. Like, I guess on the surface, you know, to make it more fair in terms of the outcome for the artists and the outcome for the executives. So I think that I would start there. Like, you know, a lot of people make a lot of money off of music that don't write the music and that don't tour and sing the music and that don't, you know, eat and breathe it. And it's been that way for a very long time, you know? So I think, yeah, if there were anything, just make it fair. Make it where it's not about, you know, extorting artists for their properties, you know? Like, everyone gets that there should be profit. Everyone gets that it should be lucrative. There's nobody that doesn't want it to be either of the two, but at least, you know, make the playing field something where it's just based on the talent and the response and nothing more.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that 110%, man. You know, and I think too, like they always say, knowledge is power. So when you got a lot of these musicians, they grow up in the hood, they're not necessarily financially literate. They're not so astute to business. And you hot, you popping. Like, you get like a single that's moving, might get a little radio play. Or nowadays with these kids, like they the overnight YouTube sensations where they'll pop virally, you know? And now you got all these executives that they're reaching out because they're the latest and greatest. Mm-hmm. And they're thrown into this fame and this rush and all this paperwork and they don't know. So to your point, yeah, for all the listeners out there that are musicians and they're trying to get in the industry, like, make sure the paperwork is right, because the business is a large part of it. You know, music is it's actually a small component, you know, like the business is what really can make or break a career. You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Yeah, definitely be cognizant of what it is that you're signing on for. And definitely don't be afraid to stand up for yourself, for your future, for your income, for your worth. You know, you should be okay if you do those things.
That's a fact. That's a fact. And one thing we talk about on this podcast too is generational wealth. So always being forward thinking to say, all right, the decision that I make today, how is this not only going to impact me, but generationally, like, what's it going to look like for my kids' kids? And will I be able to leave this behind? You know, because a lot of times when we grow up in our community, it's like, you know, they tell you, well, you know, get a good city job, get a good state job, you know, get some benefits. Right. You know, but that's what we taught in the hood, you know, but it's like, you know, when someone passed away, unfortunately, you can't leave that job to your kids. You know what I'm saying? So
have some sort of you have to have assets, you have to have liquidity, you have to have a long term plan. You want to diversify into things, and you want to try to have more than one flow of revenue, you know. And you're right, those are the things that we're not taught. And those are the things that execs know, and that people that are staffed at labels know. And the naivete of young artists is something that is pretty much utilized by executives and labels, and it has been so for years, you know. And it's kind of that thing where if you don't ask, they don't tell, you know. So you've got to be on top of all of that, and just how that plays into, like, we're talking about, you know, putting yourself in a position to have generational growth and financial wellness, how that, you know, comes into play is if you're on top of these things, you're enabling yourself to utilize those tools to ensure that outcome. And like they say, it's chess, it's not checking.
That's it. That's you know, it, man.
So once you start actually looking at it in the sense of it being a chessboard, and you start looking at not just that one move in front of you, but all those possibilities of what that move could lead to, mm-hmm. you know, then you start to assess it a little different.
Definitely, definitely, man. So all gems, man, all facts, you know. Another question that they had for you, Mike, was who is hands down your favorite MC of all time?
Oh, man, you can't answer. But to narrow it to one, there's no way you could narrow it.
So you know what? Let's do this. Let's remix it. Who's your top five that you would say if you had to pick five?
Even that's hard, but just people that come to mind. KRS-One, Rakim, Kool G Rap, definitely. LL and Ice Cube.
That's a tough list. That's a tough list, man. Because all of those cats, man, they could spit, but you know, they were just like super dope, man. Like they had presence too. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So yeah, definitely, definitely, man. And LL, without a doubt, man. Him, Kool G Rap. Like when you think about Queens, I mean, lyricist. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it really set the tone, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, most definitely, man. A question that we had. This is from Shay, and Shay is actually from Brooklyn. She wanted to ask. She said, given the recent passing of DMX, he was a great, great force in hip hop. How did you deal with his passing, and you know, what was your relationship like with X?
It definitely wasn't at all easy to deal with. You know, I definitely look at our relationship as a special bond. Like, he wasn't just an artist I worked with. You know, I consider him family, you know, so it was incredibly hard to deal with his passing as well as Black Rob passing, like right behind him. So I don't think it's something that you ever really get over. I just think it's one of those things in life that as life progresses, you just find it easier to go on and to accept it. So it's not anything that you'll ever get over. You know, it's going to always be a part of you that hurts from it. So I miss him to death. I miss him tremendously. I love him to death. And yeah, it hurt a lot, you know, but I know that he, if anything, he'd want me to, you know, keep up with my own fight. And if anything, that they're behind me in whatever world it is that we all go to after this, you know, so I just look at it that way, and I just keep on going from there. I just am very grateful for the time that I did have, you know, where he played a part in my life. And I'm just grateful for the memories that I do have, you know, the good times that we did get to have. So that's pretty much how I got myself through it and how I'm getting myself through it, you know, with both of them, you know, passing away.
Yeah, and you know, and it's crazy because it's like the duration was such a short span, you know. It's like, wow, like back to back. And to your point, it's like, you know, there's a saying, it's like you know, a lot of times when people death, it makes you appreciate life, and like it makes you realize you have to live, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're all on borrowed time. No one really knows what tomorrow's gonna hold, so we just gotta, you know, we just got to be appreciative of the time that we do have here. And, you know, and be appreciative of those people that are good to us and that pour into us on a daily basis.
Yeah. You know? And that's all we can do. So, you know, get, like I said, it's not anything that you're ever going to get over. Mm-hmm. You just find ways to live with it and to keep going.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's all we can do.
That's a fact. That's a fact, man. Another question, Mike, for you is if you could go back in time and have a conversation with your younger self, like 18-year-old Mike, what are some gems that you would drop on yourself? Like they say, if I knew then what I know now, what are some bars that you would kick to yourself? Like, yo, do it like this. You know what I mean?
Probably be a book. appreciation is the key to it all. Mm. Like, everything starts with appreciation. What do you want them to say about you when it's all over? Meaning, you know, when this life of yours is over, what is it you would want to hear people say about you? And if you figure that out, then you'll live your life accordingly. Always remember what matters first, and and have faith, have confidence, have no fear in what you don't know. There's going to always be some sort of time where you're not going to know how something's going to turn out, or you're not going to know the answer, or you're not going to be able to read the tea leaves, but you can be okay with that. You know, that those are, you shouldn't let that at all shake your faith or your confidence or your ability to stay honed in on your mission. Just be okay with knowing that sometimes you won't know, you know, and just stay focused and just be positive and just stay on your path and it'll be fine. And be patient. Trust your process. You know,
that's
like, trust your process. Like, there's never been anyone that's been told whatever they wanted in life would be given to them on this day at this time, at this hour, you know? So just be patient, know what you want, ask for what you want, go after what you want, but be patient with the process.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And, you know, it's a fact because, you know, it's a saying, it's like, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. So a lot of times people always comparing where they at to other people. And I think social, you know what I'm saying? Social media really messes with people's mental, because as soon as they log in, they see everybody winning, or so they seem. You know, everything is glossed over. Everything got filters. You know, it's so fake. The filters got filters nowadays. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's like you can't compare with your chapter one to someone's chapter 10, you know, and just enjoy the process.
You know? Exactly. And you can't, I think one of the things that is funny you mentioned, one of the things I recently learned was the concept of judgment and being judgmental. And somebody explained to me how if you try to allow yourself to not be judgmental about people or things or scenarios, then it doesn't line you up for comparisons. And comparisons line you up for hate, and that lines you up for bad vibes. And, in order to stay clear of all of that and just stay on your directive, like, just look at things for what they are and that's it. And then that, you don't have to form any real opinion on it. You know, it is what it is. And in that way, you're actually preventing the, well, I would have went this way, or I would have done it this way, or that person should be this, or that person should. And if you don't look at it that way, you don't line yourself up for certain shit that takes you off of the path that you're on. You know,
That's all facts, man. That's all facts, Mike. Another question that they have for you, Mike, is what is the key, in your opinion, to longevity in regards to success? Like, what do you feel is a key component that someone needs in order to just continue doing what they do in their respective field?
I have no clue.
All right, so Mark from Boston, you stump Mike. He ain't got no clue, man.
I don't think anybody can give anybody a concrete answer on that. I think some of it is hard work. I think some of it is dedication. I think some of it is endurance. I think some of it is well. And then I just think some of it is just something that you can't articulate. Like, I think people resonate with people for whatever reason that is, that the masses have said, well, you know what? You remind me of me the most out of all of these other people. And why that is, I don't think anyone could ever tell the world, you know? So I don't think anyone could really answer that. I think that all you can do is, as I said, is just stay honed in on your path and where you want it all to go. And just trust in that process. And if that includes longevity within it, then that's what you're gonna get. You know what I mean? So, but I don't think anyone can rightfully answer that. I just don't.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, because at the end of the day, like we said, everybody's story is different.
It's different.
So, right. So there's no cookie cutter, one size fits all approach. You know, what success looks like for someone who's a plumber might totally be different from someone who's investing stocks, you
right.
know,
or even to keep it with music. Like, you have artists that, you know, they don't have gigantic catalogs, but they're still regarded just as godly as, you know, like artists that have catalogs with hundreds of songs. You know, you have been around for quite some time, and then there's artists that have been here in untimely fate, but they're still regarded as being, you know, that shit. And
right.
that's why I said, I don't know that anybody could give an accurate answer to that. I just think it's a combination of shit. If it's magic, it's magic. And anyone could actually be like, yo, what is magic? You don't really know what magic. That's what it is.
That's a fact. That's a fact. That's a fact, man. So another question that someone asked, and this is actually from Shannon. She's based in Miami. Mm-hmm. And her question was, who is one of your favorite music producers?
Wow, there's a lot of them. Dr. Dre, definitely. I think he's one of the most precise and gifted producers the world's ever known. Like, for a reason. So I would have to say him. Like, yeah, that's definitely someone I would say that about. I think Just Blaze is incredible as a producer. I think Salaam Remy is an incredible producer. There's a lot of people.
Oh, dope, man. Yeah, Salaam Remy, Just, all those guys, man. Beast. Yeah. Beast, yeah. Man. Production is just nasty, yeah. Man. You
yeah.
know?
I mean,
yeah, it's crazy, man. Crazy. Salaam did a lot of records for Nas too, man. Some of them records are just bananas.
I mean, honestly, Travis Scott is a phenomenal producer. Like, I listen to some of the things that he's done, and I'm like, yeah, like, sonically, it's very crisp, and it's very bony. So, a lot of people.
Super dope, man. All right, so this question comes, we're coming at the tail end right now. This comes from Mike, actually from Denver. It's actually a pretty dope question. His question for you is this. He said, a lot of times entertainers such as musicians and athletes are told things like, quote unquote, shut up and dribble. Do you think that entertainers and athletes should speak out on social issues?
I actually think it depends on the individual. I don't think that because somebody has an occupation that involves them being in the public eye, that necessarily means that they're supposed to be an advocate for this, that, or the third, or speak out. I do, on the other hand, I would say that if there's a situation or if there's something that's going on that's way bigger than us all and you're impacted by it and you feel motivated to say something about it, then shouldn't have any reluctancy at all. And it shouldn't matter that you're a basketball player or a stock car driver or a tennis star, or none of that should come into play if you feel motivated enough to take a stance. And if your stance is going to also help galvanize and bring attention to something that needs to be remedied, then yeah, go for it, you know? But I don't think that just because people are athletes or entertainers or anything that has anything to do with notoriety, I don't think that that means that, you know, it also comes with, oh yeah, and by the way, you're going to be a public speaker for this as well. No, if there's no sincerity in them saying things about it, then why do it? You know, but if it's something they believe in and if they believe strongly about it, then they should not at all feel that because of sponsors or public opinion or team owners or news outlets that they have to be stifled and that they can't speak. No, if you feel you need to speak, then speak.
Yeah. That's a fact, man. And you know, the crazy thing is, like, to your point, a lot of times these people, like, they feel like they're in a trick bag because they start thinking about, damn, if I say something about this, that this might mess up my money, you know, my sponsors and all of that. But you know, silence is consent. So at the end of the day, it's like, if it's true to you, it's true to your character, your conviction, you got to speak out on that, man. You know,
exactly. I mean, we're all gonna know if you mean it or not at the end. Day. And that's why I said I don't think that just because people find themselves in occupations that involve the public eye or notoriety, I don't think that automatically by default makes them a spokesperson for every issue under the sun. I think they should only do that if they feel compelled to speak out. And I think if they do feel compelled to speak out, that they should not let any of these specters or possible consequences get in the way of them speaking. You know, if it's in you to do it and you feel it, then go do it.
Definitely, 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 man. That's a fact. So the last question, Mike, this comes from Paul from Canada. And Paul's question is straight to the point. He said, when the album dropping?
Paul is coming out September.
Paul coming. Guns blazing. Paul out here.
That's coming, Paul, September. No, right now, tentatively, we're scheduled, I think, for like the second week in September.
Okay.
It may be a little sooner, it may be a little later. There's still a couple of songs that are going to get added to the project overall. So depending on how that goes and how that fits into the scheme of things, we'll know. But you can definitely rest assured it'll be out in fall.
Paul, that's what's up. That's all right, Paul, you can be easy, man. It's coming, man. It's coming. Well, that's what's up, Mike, man. It's always a pleasure, man. It's always a pleasure, King, man. You know, and we looking forward to the new music, man. We definitely going to promote always on our platform, man. We got nothing but love for you, man.
I appreciate it, man. It's a privilege, and I always have a blast here with you. So, again, bro, I thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to getting the music out there. You guys getting it, the world getting it. So yeah, absolutely. Let's just continue the trend, brother. I'm here.
Definitely, definitely, man. That's what it is, man. Much love, man. Yes, sir.
Anyone who needs any more info, they can go to my Twitter. That's Real Mike Geronimo. They can go to my Instagram. That's Mike Geronimo. They can go to the Facebook fan page. You can go to the website, www.mikegeronimomusic.com. There's a SoundCloud, there's a YouTube channel, there's bells, lights, whistles, everything.
everything. Yeah. Make sure y'all go out there, y'all follow all of those social medias, man. We definitely going to keep y'all posted when the album drops because y'all know it's going to be fire. So it's no question. No question, man. So as always, much love, King.
Thank you, bro. Salute, man. I appreciate you.
No doubt, family. No doubt. You know it.
Yeah.
So much that it seems wrong. Never gon' lose, that's my theme song. I just to kill any jeans on. Back to reality, ain't no one bad as me. See, they be doubting, but I keep
keep on actually pushing, not giving up. That's how I give it up. Pushing, not giving up. That's how I give it up. That's how I give it up.